This is Jennifer Hunt interviewing Maureen Jones on the 8th of May 2014 at her home in Milford-on-Sea, Lymington. Maureen, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm sorry, you've caught me there. Do you want me... I'm sorry.
It's okay. Tell me a little bit about who you are, your personal sort of life. And
oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm married with two children and four grandchildren. I started married life out in Ceylon, and then we came home in 65, and we lived in Halstead, Essex. And there I first got involved with the WRBS.
And why did you decide to join WRBS in 1968?
Because I saw an advertisement in the local paper and I thought I'd like to do that. The two children were at school and I still had to collect them from school and take them to school, and it was something to do in the week. And I enjoyed meeting the older people.
And what did you know about WRVS before you joined?
Very little. During the war, they came round and gave us stirrup pumps to put out incendiary bombs, and sort of they collected pots and pans to make aeroplanes, and that's all I really knew about them.
And would you be able to describe your sort of earliest memory of delivering Meals on Wheels with WRVS?
We went out always in twos, and we collected the meals from a school. They were put into aluminium hot locks, which were warmed by charcoal, and we did a round of about 15. And the conditions we went into were quite hard for the clients, but it was still very interesting. In those days, I used to take my daughter out with me, who was four, and they absolutely loved seeing the children. I think it gave them a sort of pick-up for the day.
And how many meals were you delivering a week?
I think there we were delivering about 15. I think there were about three rounds in Halstead itself and the outlying country side.
And did you work with other volunteers?
Yes, in those days we had to go in with a partner, because we never knew quite what the conditions were, and some of the men were a bit naughty with us, you know. That's why we went in.
How are they naughty?
Well, you know, they did actually try and pinch from the bottom or anything like that, but we just felt that was the order that and you followed orders in those days.
And can you, you've already mentioned sort of a little bit about the people you've delivered to, but can you describe some of your clients or the people who received the Meals on Wheels?
They were very poor people. I said to, there was one in particular, my children were at home and I had to take them with me, and I said to my partner, look, don't come with me today, I'll take the children, because my son was a bit older than Kate. And we went into this man, and he's lying back in his chair and he had a grey parrot beside him, and the the parrot was saying, hello, hello. And I realised the man was dead in his chair. So I said, come on, I don't think he wants his meal today. But there were no phones to ring, and nobody had a phone around. And so we left him there, quite comfortable, until I got back to the office. But that was one introduction I had. But later on, there were worse conditions when I was at Harlow, and even last year, I think we met our worst case of somebody living in Lymington in appalling conditions.
And what were the, how would you describe the meals that you were serving?
The meals either came from the schools, or they came from different firms who would make them up. They were good. It was quite a lot, you know, it was better than these frozen meals. They were delivered in aluminium round tins, a pudding, well, a main course and a pudding. And there was one individual. In Harlow, we used to take round gravy and custard in thermos flasks to pour over the meal. And there was one man living in a flat in such terrible conditions. He had a dog which he never exercised, so you can see what I'm getting at. It was filthy. And so we always used to take the tops off the custard and the gravy. So we smelt those instead. It was bad. It was bad.
And then in 1972 you moved. That was when you moved over to Harlow.
Yes, I moved it because Peter was with BP then, and he was in London. So I moved over. I tried to join in Epping, and they said, oh yes, you can come and lay tables. Well, I didn't really want to lay tables. I did enough of that at home. I wanted to get out to Meals on Wheels. So I was at a show in Harlow, you know, country show, and they were there, and that's where I joined them.
And was Meals on Wheels in Harlow any different from Halstead?
Yes, it was much bigger set up. Harlow was really still a very new town, sort of cement blocks of flats, and had really no feeling of community because they were all ex-Londoners, more or less. And it was a difficult town in those days. And there we had about 20 to 25 on a round. But we only did it twice a week. The council did it on the other days. And eventually we couldn't get members, people to join, because the council paid their drivers and helpers. And well, obviously a lot of them didn't want to, you know, they wanted the money. But was the same with hot blocks, they called them, with charcoal to keep them warm. And then we had to wash up the dishes, which wasn't funny after they've been sort of put in a bag and all got cold. It was quite a job, so it was a long job. But I enjoyed it.
And then, how did you become a Meals on Wheels organiser?
Because there was nobody else. And I think I was fairly young. And they said, right, you know, will you take it on? Yeah, that's how I became a Meals on Wheels organiser.
And how would you describe your role as an organiser?
Well, I was much younger than all the other people. And I was a bit frightened of them. And they soon let you know if anything went wrong on the round, if it was, you know, I hadn't ordered enough meals. But they were very kind, and they used to, I think the meal costs 1 and 6, which was a sort of, you know, in old money, and they just sort of gave you the money and you had to collect it all in and then bank it. Yeah, it was quite a sort of a job to do, quite a responsibility. But I enjoyed that. And you used to go and see the customers to see what they really liked, not that they had any choice in the meal. But in those days, it was much more individual. We knew their birthdays, and we always took them a birthday present or something like that. And at Christmas, we used to take a bottle of sherry round and give them a little drop of sherry for Christmas. You know, in a they produced a sherry glass, and that was it. But it was nice. It was good.
It was more of a social aspect
yes,
to it.
Yes. Yes.
And do you have any memorable moments as a Meals on Wheels organiser?
Well, there was one place out in the country, a little bit out from Harlow, where there was a woman who was overrun by mice. And I had to get members who didn't mind mice, because they were running everywhere. In Guernsey, if I can go on a bit ahead of time, there was a woman who was it was really a hovel she lived in, and she used to sit over her fire. If we were very lucky, it would, her fire would smoke, and the smell of the room was taken up by smoke. That was really our lucky day. Mrs. B was rather like a witch, really, sitting over her fire, and her face was filthy, her hands were filthy. And when she died, they found she had £1,000 in old black and white £5 notes under her bed. She also had a revolver, and she also had 20 rounds of ammunition for the revolver. So I'm glad we didn't fall out with her. We didn't know where the revolver, it might have been during the occupation that she had the revolver. But, yeah. That was one of our people.
And so going back to sort of the 1970s, you, how did Books on Wheels get started in Harlow?
They just had one round of Books on Wheels. And when we decided that really and truthfully we were very struggling very bad for volunteers, I suggested to the organiser if we could expand the Books on Wheels. So we transferred all the members who wanted to to do Books on Wheels, which was very popular because you didn't have to be there at a certain time, because in Meals on Wheels they expect you sort of at 10 to 12, and if you're later than that they grumble. But you could stop and talk to the people for a little bit longer, because you hadn't got that hot mule to deliver. I didn't know anything about, in those days, Mills and Boom. I'd never heard of them. And they all seemed to want that. And I said, well, what is this? And they said, oh, they're love stories.
And how were you involved in Books on Wheels?
Well, it was through... We went to the library, and they used to... As I said, we went round the people who were going to receive them to know what they were really interested in love stories, in detectives and biographies. And then we told the library, and they would put those books out for us. And we used to... I got baskets, I think, from Tesco's. They let me have some baskets. And we used to take them in supermarket baskets to the people, and then collect the ones that they had read. I think we got paid by for mileage from the library service.
And what was a... You've talked a little bit about what your Books on Wheels round, but what was sort of a typical round, Books on Wheels round, like?
I think that was much smaller because of the weight of the books. Mm-hmm. I think we only had about sort of 10 to deliver, 10 or 8 or 10 people. So it's a big town, Harlow, lots of flats. So it was... Obviously, we had to cut down the recipients and sort of use more of our members to do this around all the rounds. It was about every fortnight.
Mm. And did you also work with a partner with Books on Wheels?
No, not so much, but we still did, because we had our... They became our friends, the partners, and it was just nice to work with somebody and have a laugh and a chat. It was more social to go with someone. You were used to it, you know.
And you also became involved with emergency services.
Yes.
How did you become involved with that?
Well, they always spoke that emergency services was the jewel in the crown of WRVS. It was very exciting. We became involved with it when we did the one in three or three in one talks, which every member had to have to if they joined the WRVS. And this was about how to prepare for a nuclear attack. And from there you went on to emergency services, which really began in the war. And we were trained to work to the same system throughout the country. So wherever you were, you knew what the plan was and how to fall in with a team. It really was very interesting and very exciting. We used to be sort of on call often if they're expecting anything, if at any time, day or night. I think I lost my way here.
It's okay. We were talking. So you were talking about you had to have the three in one.
Three talk. In one. Yes. That was how to prepare for nuclear, which it was a threat, and you had to put up your put white sheets up at the windows to prevent this awful flash that would come, and to prepare somewhere safe, like under the stairs, to have water and tin food and candles. I really don't think it would have worked at all, looking back on it. But it helped us to against this worry of nuclear. I can remember saying to a friend when we were having this talk, well, I'm going to fill my cupboard full of gin. I think that's the best thing.
Probably was.
But, I think it was propaganda more than anything else.
And did you give any of these talks yourself?
Yes, yes.
And what sort of... who were you giving these talks to?
Two new members.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They weren't cheerful talks. And I think it alarmed some members quite a lot, or new members. But I think being sort of typically British, we just sort of, you know, went through it.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of advice were you giving them in this talk?
Well, to have water. I think we were going to take the dog in under the stairs as well. I don't really know how we were all going to live like that. They were sort of one-hour talks, sort of... for 3 weeks, sort of, you know, one each week. But as I say, I don't think it would have helped us at all. Especially when I went on to learn more about nuclear war, you realised it wouldn't help you.
And you also attended some emergencies as well as part of emergency services.
They was exciting, fires, and we used to turn out at night, and when the supermarkets came in, we had arrangements with the supermarkets. And before that, with the local baker or the local dairy, that we could give them a call at night and get milk. And we always had emergency packs in our offices to take out, like tea and biscuits and so on. Because we were really... In those days, the fire service didn't do anything for their crews. It was, if it was a large fire, the WRVS was called to give tea and biscuits, or even make, if it was a big fire, sandwiches for the firemen. But above all, they needed
liquid because of wearing breathing apparatus and things like that. It really was. I think everybody enjoyed emergency services because it's so unusual.
And it's doing something a bit different as
yes.
well.
Yes, yes.
And you also were called out to the evacuation of Ugandan Asian refugees at Stansted Airport. Can you
yes.
tell me a little bit about that?
That came because of General Amin expelling all the Asian community, and we were called out to Stansted, and for a long time we really didn't do very much except sort clothes, which came in from the public. There were so many clothes we didn't know what to do with. But they all had to be sorted because some of them were not fit to give to anybody. And some were absolutely really super clothes. And these were all sorted into men, women, children's and babies. And we had one school sent us in with the children's clothes. In the coat pockets was a toy in every one, which was lovely. And then we got one lot in, which were the glass in the pockets, and you can see there was this feeling, we can't take all these Asians.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was lucky because at Epping, where I lived and asked to work for them, and I was told to lay, I could lay tables, the organiser there wouldn't even allow her members to go to Stansted. None of them went. But I was at Harlow, and that's how we prepared for them. We got a call in then, and I was lucky enough to be on that night shift. And it was just a complete and utter muddle. The press, I've never seen anything like the behaviour of the press crowding these Asians out and wanting reports of what happened to them and trying to get through the windows to them and to us. And we really... it was a bad day that day, but we got ourselves sorted out and it went like clockwork after that. They came in by plane, and it was decided that one of us would meet the plane and watch the people coming down the steps. And most of them were okay, you know, they could look after themselves. And then you'd find a woman with just her belongings wrapped up in a sheet with about three children. And it was my job to do this, to look out for them. And then we would escort them right through customs and through registration. And then they were given refreshments. And then they'd come upstairs to us at Stansted Airport and receive clothing. And the children used to be so excited to be wearing wool, Chang'an wool, or sweaters and this, that, and the other. And they asked us at the end, have you hand shoes? And we didn't know what they were talking about. It was gloves. I have great admiration for those people, because not one of them lost their tempers or became impatient. They were very brave. They really were. I know they were exhausted, but I think some of us would have lost our cool. They were great.
And after Stansted, did you have any other involvement with the Ugandan Asians while they were here?
No, not really. I did meet some afterwards, and I was up in London, and I met one who I was in my green uniform, and he came over and he said, "Oh, you're the lady in green." And I said, "Yes." "And did you come from Stansted?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "You were marvellous to us," which was lovely. Very nice. That was some years later.
And also you did a nuclear bunker exercise in 1976. Do you remember much about that?
Yes, that was at Colchester. Usually Colchester organised it themselves, but I got friendly with somebody at Colchester because I was then still in Harlow, and she said, "Oh, you can come along." So two of us went along, and we were there 36 hours in the bunker. You lost all sense of time because you were cooking meals. There were the people coming in, you know, the Royal Observer Corps took their meals at any time, and all these sort of high ups in the armed services, and water, and all the things, local things like sanitary, and they all came in to see how things were going. So we were in the kitchen all the time. And they had bunks for us to sleep in. Not that you really slept. But at the end of it, we were invited up to the actual operations room and watched the operation, which was really rather like, I don't know if you've seen any wartime Air Force operations, as you know, they move things and on a huge big board, and there you saw that Birmingham just disappeared. It was very realistic, and it was extraordinary to come out on the Sunday, sort of in the afternoon, and see bright sunshine, and you think, golly, that was peculiar. That really was, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can realize how people become sort of so involved, it's almost true. That's all I can say, really. It was quite a sort of step to take, and that's when you realise these talks were not going to help you.
And during that time, you also became district organiser for Epping Forest?
This was when the district organisers were introduced with the new districts, when they were completely reorganised local government. And so they appointed district organisers, and sort of the local offices. I had about 5 local offices, and I also overlooked Harlow because they had no organiser. Again, that was a bit frightening because I seemed to be much younger, and there was great opposition to having some. The local organisers didn't like the district coming in, but it was all right. You just have to work carefully with them.
And what was your role as a district organiser?
It was really to go around the districts and see if they needed help, sort of with organisation, and to take interest in the lunch clubs and in the Darby and Jones, and also emergency services, which again was very important. Also to bring in frozen meals. Nobody'd heard of frozen meals, and the schools were beginning to say we can't do this, and so it was the start of a kitchen, special kitchen set up for frozen meals, and that's what we did in Waltham Abbey. It was a good time, sort of was beginning to modernise a little bit the service.
And was that different from being sort of a Meals on Wheels organiser?
Quite different. I used to visit a very large home for, well, it was sort of asylums, where WRVS went in and sort of did a Darby and Joan club. And Sue sort of, my job was to meet other voluntary organisations as well. And through the ladies' circle, I got them a whole percussion sort of instruments, which they were very good in the end, sort of doing this, and they loved it, and they used to do dancing, and there was a dance called the Paul Jones, where you go round in a circle and the music stops and you have to play, you have to dance with the person who you stop opposite. And I stopped opposite a lady, and she said, I share a flat. And I said, oh, really? Do you? That's good. And she said, yes, I share it with Vera Lynn and the Queen. Ah, right. Really? She said, yes, and if you really want to know, Vera Lynn's much nicer than the Queen. And then they ran clubs for people with adults with Down syndrome. And there, it was the most cheerful group I've ever been to see, because they were all almost little children, and they didn't look old because they had no worries. But WRVS were very good with them. I think the members really love their work with these people. It was good. It was a good time.
And do you have any other memorable moments as your time as a district organiser?
Well, we had our troubles, but we had the county above us who could help you if you were, you know, in difficulties. I was doing emergency services talk, and one woman hadn't appeared. And it turned out that the family hadn't seen her. They last saw her just before she went off to the WRVS, and she never turned up to our meeting. And very sadly, she had been murdered in the forest. And I had the press on me. But I was well supported by my local organiser and the county organisation. And you felt you were on safe grounds. You know, I was warned, we were all warned, never to speak to the press without permission. But they would ring you time and time again. I had the telegraph on to me, how they got my number, I have no idea. But that was something else to, you know, to look after. And of course the members were terribly upset.
And that you became involved with Guernsey WRVS.
Yes, we moved from Guernsey to Guernsey from Epping, and I was there about 7 years. We did Meals on Wheels. I again went on Meals on Wheels, and we used to start at about 10 o'clock, which was quite amazing to me, but used to stop for a cup of tea or coffee at some shop while doing your Meals on Wheels round. And it all had to be finished before 12 o'clock because the members went home to feed their husbands, because it was such a small island that all the husbands, I discovered, came home for lunch. But that again was... That was where the old woman with the revolver was.
And
we did emergency service
as well. And you were called out in 1980?
Well, we used to have each year the territorials of the SAS used to come in and do a parachute jump into the sea. And there were some of the public who used to collect them out of the sea and bring them to a small ferry that we were on for them to get out of the water and change. And we were told on no account were we to turn round while they were changing. We were giving them hot tea and rum, and the organiser was allowed to look at them, but we had to have our backs turned to them. But they were a lovely set of chaps. That was very unusual. Then we had quite a few fires in Guernsey, mostly at night, sort of supermarkets and things like that. I became organiser in 81. That was difficult. I was English, and they were Guernsey. And it was quite a difficult... you had to bend over backwards, really. But they were very good. They were supportive of me. After a long, you know, their organiser had been an organiser for a very, very long time. So it was a difficult time to be taking over from her. But we didn't do... We did Darby and Joan clubs and emergency services. We went to the airport. Mist came in and they couldn't get out for 2 days. So we opened our lunch... We had a house which was for lunch. And we opened it completely up. We had blankets always ready for an emergency. And we took about 20 people, passengers, who'd been... They had no money. They'd spent all their money. And we took them in there for a night, gave them supper, and gave them breakfast. And then, luckily, the fog cleared. But they were very appreciative. And a lot of us also took them, other families, into our homes for the night, because they'd evacuated, you know, they'd finished with their hotels and there was nowhere for them to go. That was interesting. And we used to helped helicopter a crews who got terribly wet, and we had clothing for them put in our stores in the clothing stores in Guernsey, and also if there were people with... when their yachts seemed to sink, we helped them as well. It was a different kind of... different kind of work, really. Yes.
And how was your role as a county organiser different from being a district
organiser? I wasn't a county organiser. They called that a bailiwick. It was the bailiwick of Guernsey. It was much, much smaller role, and yet it was... you had to be very tactful to these people. They were very nice, the Guernsey people, but some of them still had the feeling that the British had let them down during the war. Had not helped them, but we couldn't. There was no way we could help the small islands. We couldn't have fought for them or anything like that.
And how were you involved with Easingworld College?
I was sent there for a middle management course. There was another person, another WRVS person, and a member from England there. It was all men, fire, police, and people from local services, and we stayed about 3 nights there. We found it very intensive. The police and the fire moaned and groaned that they were there. And they couldn't understand why we had volunteered to go. Well, we hadn't really. We were sent. We had to work quite hard at night. We had a lot of homework to do at night. But the police and the firemen used to sort of go out to the pub and say, oh, forget that. There I took a sort of... I didn't enjoy that course at all. It wasn't a pleasant experience.
No.
It really wasn't.
And so then, after living in Guernsey, you moved
back
over to England, yes. To London, when you were in the children's department.
Yes, I was. And I didn't do any work at all, because there wasn't anything for me to do. I put in sort of orders for children's holidays. They used to ask for extra things for, you know, giving the children's holidays. But I found that atmosphere not good. I can remember somebody coming in and giving the office cakes, and she turned to me and she said, when you've been 2 years here, you'll be able to have some birthday cake. And I thought, oh great, I think it's time I moved out of here. So it wasn't really, that wasn't for me,
no.
Going up to London. I saw the head office in a different way, really.
Yeah. And where was head office?
Oh, it was in Park Lane. Yeah. It was an old building, sort of fairly near to the Hilton. And I think they had it for a peppercorn rent. It used to be an old hospital. For in the Great War, for soldiers, I don't know how Lady Reading got hold of it, but my goodness, you knew your place, and you had to step aside when anyone came down the stairs. Oh, it was very rank orientated there,
and. Was the chairman there as well?
Chairman was there as well, yes.
And who was that at that time?
Dame, I can't think of her name, Shenfield, Barbara Shenfield. Yes, Barbara Shenfield, yes.
And did you meet her while you were at headquarters?
Yes, I did. I met her in Guernsey. She came to Guernsey for 2 days, and I met her there.
And what was she like as a person?
She was quite different from the previous chairman, who had time for every member, but Dame Barbara was an economist, really, and she hadn't got the same way with members as Dame was also Frances Claude. She hadn't got the same way with members. Mm. Yeah.
And then, so then you went to Essex Meals on Wheels instead of Children's
Services. Yes, I went back to Meals on Wheels in Essex for the county, which I enjoyed very much indeed. It was it's a large county, and I was very pleased to be back there. It was a good time. I went all over the county, looking at the Meals on Wheels. And we also had the Butter Mountain. Have you heard of the European Butter Mountain?
A little bit. You'd like to tell me a bit more about the Butter Mountain?
They had all this butter in storage, and we were suddenly told they'd got to get rid of all this butter. I mean, you know, over Europe and all over the place. And we were told it was to go to the pensioners and the clubs and the lunch clubs and everywhere. All of the clubs, not just WRVS, but everywhere that we could think of, Red Cross clubs, everywhere. And we were told there were 5 tons of it to collect from a store. And we didn't even know what 5 tons looked like. And so we had all the various districts coming up to collect this butter. And it all had to be accounted for. I think I got it wrong by £2 at the very end. We couldn't account for £2 of butter. And you'd think it was the crown jewels, because I got a rocket for losing £2 of butter. But I had even people ringing up from abroad to say they wanted their butter. They were on holiday in Spain or somewhere, and they wanted their butter. They're up in Northumberland with Aunt so-and-so, and they wanted their butter. And I said, I'm sorry, we've got to deliver it now. And I think we made about 10 deliveries, you know, county-wise, all over the counties with this butter. It was quite a problem, really. A lot of extra work. But I think that WRVS did quite well out of that. I think they did.
And by sort of that time in the 80s, had Meals on Wheels changed quite significantly from 1968?
Yes. I think they were coming again from the schools, but then insulated containers were being used, and it was beginning to, we were still cooking some meals for ourselves, but it hadn't really changed that much. There was still that personal contact with the people, the sherry going out at Christmas, and perhaps some garden flowers going into an old person. But you could see that something had to change in the service. It was still running almost sort of not wartime, but things were becoming difficult to get volunteers, people to take responsibility. That's what we were beginning to find. People hadn't got their time and just weren't interested in taking up any responsibility. And it was a responsibility if you're going to do the job well.
Mm-hmm. And then in 1988 you moved to Monmouth in Wales.
Back I went to Meals on Wheels in Monmouth. That was a lovely job because it's so beautiful in Monmouth, and we travelled sort of not just in Monmouth but all outlying parts of the country there, and that was really good. I loved that.
And were you doing more or fewer deliveries out over there?
I think we were doing about the same, but they were lovely, the Welsh people. And there was an old man, he'd been a miner, and his room was full of cups for pigeons, winning pigeons. He had the most terrible lung disease, but he always had a bar of chocolate for us. He was a sweet old chap. And I said to him, you know, there was a speaker called Thomas in the Parliament. And I said, are you a relation of him? And he always said, yes, I come from the same village. But he was an exceptional old chap. Lovely.
And by this time, sort of by the late 80s, were the people who received Meals on Wheels changing?
Yes, they were. I mean, that's the first time I've seen people on a mobile phone. They were becoming, you know, just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought, oh, things are changing. But they still like their Meals on Wheels. I think it's because we had time to give and a time to have a laugh with them and so on. But they hadn't changed to these sort of, I'd call it, these frozen foods, you know. It was still being delivered in these aluminium containers. And you dish them out on their plates. It still had that great contact with the elderly.
And then you became vice chairman of Wales in 1990.
That's right. I worked at Cardiff. Previously in the head office at Cardiff, I was in charge of prisons and magistrates' courts, events and personnel. And then I became vice chairman of Wales. There were two vice chairmans and the chairman herself. And this was very interesting work. It was completely different to what I'd done. I visited Cardiff Prison and Usk Prison and Swansea Prison and the magistrates' courts, where they gave out coffee to the people who were waiting around. I enjoyed doing the events. We had the very big Welsh show up in the middle of Wales, and personnel. And being in Monmouth, I moved around quite a bit in Wales, especially going up to North Wales, which I loved. And I did training as well. Being vice chairman, really, it was a title, I think. It was these other things that I did meet. I met an awful lot of Welsh people, and they were lovely. I think the name of Jones helped. So, although I spoke with an English accent, but it was good. I met many, many people. I once did at one of the supermarkets, we were trying to start a new shop at Abergavenny, a WRVS shop, and we wanted staff to staff it, and we did a run on the supermarket as people came out, and we were eyeing up the 60-year-olds, 50 to 60-year-olds. And there was an old lady watching me, and I didn't really have eye contact with her because I knew she was in her 80s or somewhere about, but she couldn't stop staring at me. And at last she came up to me at this supermarket and she said, "I'd like to know if your teeth are real or are they false?" And I just burst out laughing. And she said, I said, "They're real." "Oh," she said, "are they? Really?" And then walked off. But I was beginning to think when she came up to me that she was going to volunteer. And I didn't know what to say to her because I didn't really want, we weren't looking for 80-year-olds.
No.
We were And then when the shop opened, the chairman, Elizabeth Toulson, came down, and they went and had lunch with her, and I said, "I'll stay and look after the shop." Well, I'm dyslexic with numbers, and we had flowers, and a man came in, and they sort of told me how to use the till, and the man came in and he bought some flowers. And they were $3.50, but it came up on the till £3,500 for the flask. I laughed, but he didn't think it very funny at all. No. So that was my experience of being in the hospital shop. I wasn't a success.
And did you do any other sort of activities with volunteers as a chairman?
Yes, I was all over the place, really. I did. We did emergency work. I actually, we had a day out with the emergency people. I'd never worked at, do you know what a Sawyer boiler is? Yes.
Yes, we've got two in the archive.
You haven't, have you? Well, this is the first time I met those, and we actually cooked with those. I was also a sort of troubleshooter when things got a bit strained up in the north. But it was very interesting. Again, it was such a variety of work. The Royal Show, we looked after the lost children's tent, and it was an enormous, it wasn't a tent, it was a marquee, and we had a lot of we had one team of pure Welsh speakers. They weren't WRVS, and because a lot of the children could not speak English, which I found quite amazing, really. But they come down from the farms,
yeah,
and So this team was very necessary to have for the children. And we had information desks there to, you know, guide people around the show. That was a great occasion every year.
And so when you resigned, you became involved with Meals on Wheels in Leamington?
Yes.
And what did that involve being?
That was just going back to grassroots. I wasn't an organiser. I just did the Meals on Wheels. Again, I really loved Meals on Wheels. I enjoyed meeting the people. We were a very happy team. We still meet up sort of every 2 months. You'd think that things had moved on, but as I said in the beginning, we came across a woman who was living in complete and utter squalor, and there was nothing we could do. We reported it to the social services, and as her daughter was supposed to be looking after her, there was little they could do. But I can honestly tell you, it was the most awful place we'd ever been in. And you really can't sort of believe in this day and age that people could live in this sort of condition.
And so not really being able to help, was that very different from earlier in sort of the 70s and 80s?
Yes, I always felt we could help a bit. In Harlow, I was saying about the old man who had the dogs, and there was a colonel's wife who used to deliver meals for us, and she came in and said, "Why are you sitting on your bottom, Maureen, when you know this man is living in this squalor?" And I said, "It's been reported to social services, and we can't do much more than that." And she said, "Well, I am going to see about him." And she did. And she got that man moved within a fortnight. And within another fortnight, he was dead. So, you know, you cannot just remove people from their own home, really, without their... At least they're protected now, rather than the social services stepping in the old days quite quickly.
And you also became involved with Books on Wheels again.
I was back at Books on Wheels, which was quite a small... It wasn't a big round at all. But it was nice to do it. As I say, you had time to talk to people, to actually sit down and talk to people. And I think they quite enjoyed that. I did.
Mm-hmm. And so... Through it, which is sort of between 1997 and sort of now, when you've been doing Books on Wheels and Meals on Wheels and things like that, was that very different from when you'd done it before?
Not really. The camaraderie was the same. The laughter was the same. And the sympathies was the same. You met sadness, and you met sort of, just the same, really. Very lonely people, some quite cheerful, but all very interesting.
And what has happened to sort of Meals on Wheels and Books on Wheels in this area now?
Well, we were told that we were going to be made redundant by the County Council. And that was it. We read in the paper, the local paper, that Lymington had been awarded some award for Meals, for their work with WRVS. And we were never told by WRVS. Somebody went and collected our award. We still don't know what it was. We were never told by WRVS. And that left us with a very, really sour taste.
Yes.
It was not a way to say thank you to us.
No.
Not that we expected, but it actually made the members, well, very, very angry that this had happened. Somebody's got our award somewhere. This is what I feel, the communication isn't good. But that was the end of our careers, really. But I have so many happy members, memories and laughter with friends all over the place.
And have you taken on any other roles with WRVS?
No, because there is no WRVS here. We were told we could go up to Andover.
That's quite far.
And then I've got a letter in my files to know if we'd like to go and work in West Sussex. Because West Sussex, they went on strike when they were told they weren't going to be made redundant. They weren't quiet members like us. They went on strike and more or less left the service. And we were asked if we knew anyone who could come and help, and could we come and help ourselves? Well, you can imagine we didn't answer, actually. It was so extraordinary to be asked that. I mean, fancy going from here to West Sussex.
It's quite far. And have there been any other changes that have affected you as a volunteer?
No, I've had a wonderful life with WRVS. I know things have to change. I'd love to have gone on just a little bit more. But I realise that I'm now 82 and shouldn't have been doing Meals on Wheels at all. I wouldn't have been allowed to in the old days, but there aren't the volunteers, and I still enjoyed my going out and meeting everybody, and that won't change.
No. And would you like to continue with?
I can't. I'm not going to drive up to Andover. It's just not on.
No. And where would you say that Royal Voluntary Service, as it is now, place in society is today?
I don't know, Jennifer. I really don't know, because we were always told our communication was very bad. That was always. So, who knew about what WRVS in those days stood for? But we used to see ourselves when there's a big anything happened on television, you would always see WRVS in their orange tabards. Now you don't even hear anything about them. I think that's worrying. I don't know if emergency services are working now. We don't seem to have that communication through the magazine or whatever it's called. That doesn't seem to tell us anything. I have rung the service on occasions and never got anywhere with them. You know, oh yes, we'll ring you up. And my fellow members feel the same, that they seem to have lost communication with the grassroots. I think having the local offices, the district's offices, we worked more as a team and more as a family. And I don't know how it works now, but that is change, and that is the future, and it's for them to get it right. Occasionally I read that they've done a survey on something in the papers, but I really don't know what they're about. I see them in Bournemouth Hospital when I go there as a patient, and they're pretty angry about the changes. I just say I was a member, and they said, yes, but it's quite interesting to know they're come back. I never let on anything.
No.
But I think they're feeling neglected. That's the word. The grassroots. I have no idea what happens up above. And as I say, I'm now too old to do anything about it. It's not my... Keep your fingers out.
And so, finally, to sort of conclude, what would you say was your most sort of treasured memory or most memorable moment of being involved with WRVS?
Well, that's a big... I've had so many happy memories with them. I have had so many happy memories with them. I enjoyed doing Wimbledon, the information desks. I think it's the whole thing of camaraderie, of being part of a family. I think the service we had at Westminster Abbey for Thanksgiving when we were 50 years old was a lovely time, where you met lots of people you knew. We were proud of ourselves. Yeah.
And you mentioned the information desks at
Wimbledon,
which we haven't quite covered, but what were you doing on those information desks?
Well, first of all, you go to learn. There were 5 information desks around Wimbledon, and we worked with a partner. There were 12 of us each week for the fortnight, and we answered any question at all. They even came and asked where was the nearest laundrette. When would it stop raining? Many
beautiful suits, say, could you tell me, they weren't taking the mickey out of us, but could you tell me when you think it's going to stop raining? It was extraordinary, the questions that were asked. We were asked to sew on buttons for men's trousers. We were asked to look after children that were lost. It was so varied. We work fairly closely with St John Ambulance, and we had to go up once to a coach of children who'd come down from the Midlands. It was very hot, and these schools used to bring the children down. I don't think the children knew anything about tennis, but the teacher got a free ticket into Wimbledon and said to the children, oh, meet us under the clock at sort of 5 o'clock and we'll go back by coach. And this teacher had said to the children, I'm going now to get the tickets. You stay here. And by about 12 o'clock, they hadn't seen her. And they discovered that she had come down on the wrong day and scarpered and left the children in the bus. So we had to take up water for the children and send them back on their way because they'd been sitting in the bus all the time. And there were very odd things you had to deal with. There was another case of a child having an appendicitis, and the St John Ambulance wanted to know where the teacher was, and I had to go and find out where the teacher was sitting, which actually they knew exactly where she was sitting, Wimbledon authorities, and she wasn't there, so I went and sat in her seat until she came back to sit in her seat, and I said, you're wanted by St John Ambulance, and she said, what for? And I told her this child had been sent to hospital for appendicitis. And she said, well, that's nothing to do with me until 5 o'clock. I said, oh, yes, it is. You come with me. But things went... It was amazing, really. All the questions we were asked. And there was a great lot of learning to do. And then after 5 years, I was asked to take over. So... we had teams of members from all over the country, and they, you see, every member had to go with an experienced member to learn, and it took you about 2 years to actually learn because you were only there a week to know exactly where everything was. It was a very interesting job to do. We had a lady from Scotland who was so delighted to be there, and she didn't quite fit in. And I said, well, the chairman, Mary Corser was then chairman for Scotland, and I'd chosen the Scottish members to have lunch with her. And this member told Mary Corser a story all about what this member had done. And it was so astonishing that I think Mary Corson sort of nearly started laughing, so did I, and it was, the whole thing was
We didn't see her again, actually. We didn't have her again. But, yeah, they were good days. We actually wore, 1 year we wore a mileometer on it, and we walked about 6 to 7 miles. Myself when I was visiting the desks and taking special visitors to places they wanted to get to or something like that. It's just, we were walking round, you know, a lot of the time, but you could, the teams had, they could go on to centre court. We had 2 tickets for the teams to share. Each information box had ticket either first, the number one court, or number a centre court, which they could share. And so, you know, in their off times, they had 2 hours on and 2 hours off. And it was good, yeah.
And is there anything else you'd like to share about your time with WRVS?
No, just a lovely, happy... It was a family time, almost. It was a completely different life to what you did at home. And you met so many interesting people, lovely people. And that's how I met your boss lady.
Alice.
Alice, yes. Yes. So, yeah.
And you've kept in touch with Alice?
I've kept in touch with Alice. And I've got some things to give you for Alice's archive.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Maureen. It's been really interesting to talk to you, and it's a really good contribution to our Voices of Volunteering project.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you.